attorney, advocate, author, public speaker. The Lisa Wexler Show. WICC 600. Flip that switch and turn on your brain. Here is Lisa Wexler.
And welcome back to the show. Joining us soon is Max Sklar. Max Sklar is a Yale alum and also a podcaster. His podcast is called The Local Maximum, and he's a brilliant guy. He works at Foursquare. He's one of these genius types. Anyway, I happen to know that he was at the Harvard-Yale game. And what I'm curious about from his demographic, we just heard from Governor Lamont, who was there as well. Governor Lamont, obviously, there in an official capacity trying to redirect the protesters. But I wanted to know, Max will be joining us any moment, I wanted to know what it was like to just simply be there, one of the audience, and what he made of the protesters, whether he agrees with them or not. 203-333-9422. As yesterday's Vietnam becomes today's climate change. And this is a rallying point for young people. We have that young gal from Sweden, whose name is escaping me, but I can see her face. I can see her face before me. What is her name? Yeah. Greta.
Greta
Thunberg. Greta Thunberg. Right. Greta Thunberg. And she has led the charge to put an individual's plea behind what, you know, many people have seen as just policy. And it takes that a lot, you know, because the human brain is such, I don't know if we develop that evolutionarily or not, but you and I can be more outraged about somebody overcharging us $2 than $200 million. And it happens all the time. And we can get our grip on an issue like climate change by listening to one individual 16-year-old girl in Sweden who is pleading with us to pay attention. Somehow that is getting our attention in a way that so many different scientists were not able to. So the people, the students at Harvard, the students at Yale, they know, they already come to college with a sense of entitlement. They've already been admitted. They have the golden ticket. For the rest of their lives, they never have to prove they're smart. They just have to say they graduated from Harvard or Yale, and people assume they're smart. There it is. There's the golden ticket. And in order to get in, unless their parents bought their way in, which a small percentage do, but the vast majority of people at Harvard and Yale are there because they're very smart, they're very well-rounded, often they're very athletic. They basically do everything, and they do it well. And so when they want to organize behind a protest, this was not, according to the Norwalk Hour, this was not something that was a spontaneous protest. This is something that was planned, at which accommodations were made, in which scenarios were role played. How were they going to respond if the police got ugly? How were they going to handle their protests if people chickened out and didn't want to go on the field? What about the international students whose visas were at risk? How could they show what they wanted to do without being caught or risk arrest? And in fact, over 40 people were arrested, including Sam Waterston. Sam Waterston's such an interesting character, right? Because he plays such a he always plays, even when he's playing the gay guy in Frankie and Johnny, which incidentally was canceled because of Lily Tomlin, but she says she's sorry that she canceled it. She's sorry she stopped doing the show. Anyway, even when he's doing that role, there's something so steadfast and calming about his character. You don't see him as somebody waving banners, but in fact he did. So let's go to Max Sklar, who joins us now. Max is a Yale alum himself. He actually was at the game, so he can give us a first-person account. And he is a podcaster. He hosts The Local Maximum, which is widely available everywhere that you can get a podcast, particularly, I guess, on iTunes. Max, hi. Welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today. Hi, Max.
Hi, Lisa. How are you doing?
I'm great. And I thank you for coming on such short notice. So you're obviously, yeah, you were rooting for Yale, Max. Is that fair to say?
Yes, that's fair to say. And my main thing I'm going to contribute today is that I was there and I saw the whole thing. I'll put it to you that way.
So let's talk about it. So how did it look from the bleachers? What was it like?
Right. Well, fortunately, we had moved up to me and my group of friends had moved up to kind of the top of the stadium, halfway through the second quarter, because it was just so loud and crazy down there. And actually, at the top of the stadium, you could see more. So we got a good view The climate protest started after the Yale band halftime show. I used to be in the band, actually.
Really?
But,
wow.
Well, for the first 2 years, I was in the marching band, and then, you know.
What did you play?
What
did you play?
The trumpet.
Wow. Good for you, Max.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So they did a Lion King theme halftime show, and then the band started moving off, and then the announcer was making some more halftime announcements. I don't remember. He was announcing something about John Kerry, believe it or not. I don't really remember. And so, obviously, when the protest was happening, I was like, what is this, John Kerry or something? I don't know.
Oh.
What was happening, I think it was, you know, they just announce alumni that are there, different awards that are being given out. So-and-so is recognized for this, that sort of thing. And then the climate protesters came out with their signs, which I believe asked for Yale and Harvard to divest from fossil fuel-based companies. And so there are about, I don't know, 150 on the field. They kind of hang out there for a while. The security came by and talked to them, it looked like. I couldn't really see exactly what was going on there, but it looked like they talked to them. They took down the signs. But the protesters stayed on the field. And then a bunch of people just started streaming from the stadium, from the bleachers, onto the field. So now you had, from 150, you had, you know, hundreds. The entire field was taken.
Is that right?
And so, I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So Max Sklar, this was a protest that somehow hit a nerve with the audience it was protesting to.
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, Yale and Harvard students, sure.
Yeah, and alum and their families. So, no, because I could think of other issues in which you might have a lot of boos. But what I'm hearing is you didn't have a lot of boos.
There were some, but, you know, I mean, there were thousands of people there. But,
right.
I almost think, you know, they started playing on the loudspeaker Take Me Home, Country Road by John Denver, and I have to think that was almost like purposeful. They may have some supporters up in the box there.
Yeah, like a nice nature loving song to remind people. Right. I get it.
Yeah.
Rocky Mountain High and all that environmentalist. And John Denver was a huge environmentalist, by the way. Huge.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
What did you think of it, Max? Are you somebody who, well, first of all, do you think it was effective? In other words, do you think that it will make an impact on the people who control how the billions are invested? Do you think they will divest to fossil fuel companies?
Well, look, I don't know. I don't know what Yale and Harvard are invested in, and I can't be bothered to find out. But I can't really answer that question.
Are you in sympathy with these students who feel that the money that goes into fossil fuel companies makes our planet worse? Like, in other words, that they should, you know, follow the money, that that's a good strategy in terms of improving the environment. What do you think about that?
No, you know, I think it was an effective protest in getting their word out there. I don't, you know, I am concerned, especially after reading the internet message boards, but those, of course, are like, you know, really toxic. So, but I'm concerned with this idea that, you know, all of humanity is gonna die in like 50 years if we don't fix this in the next 10 years or something like that. And people are like, well, you know, why are you prioritizing a football game when we're all gonna die? You know, that kind of thing.
Oh.
And so I'm worried that, you know, what isn't justified if that's your position, that we're all gonna die? Because personally, like, I think, you know, I look at technology and even in, you know, environmental trends are, you know, there are problems, but I think that in 50, 100 years, people will have a way higher standard of living than we have today. And so while there are certain things that, you know, people can do to, you know, environmentally that are sound and that work, I kind of worry about this sort of ideology and brainwashing of, you know, oh, you know, all of humanity is on the line right now unless we get our way.
And just to give people an idea of you, what did you major at Yale, Max? What's your
computer science?
Computer science.
Computer science.
And is it fair to say you're a data-driven thinker? Is that fair to say?
Yes. Although if you listen to my podcast, Local Maximum, you'll see there are limits to what data can provide us. But absolutely.
But in other words, but you're somebody who looks at evidence and science in deciding an opinion.
Sure.
Yeah. No, I think that so from your point of view, you don't see do you see climate change as something that we need to be addressing, even though you don't see it as a doomsday scenario?
Yes. I mean, I'm not an expert in all the numbers around climate change. From what I did look at, there has been warming. There has been an established link between human activity and warming. But on the other hand, there have been these doomsday scenarios going back decades, almost 100 years now. I mean, the UN IPCC came out in 1989 and said we had 12 years left. Al Gore in the 2000s said we had so many years left. And so I almost wonder if in 20 years from now, we'll be sitting here with, another protest saying that we have 10 years left. And yes, maybe there have been a few environmental changes, but we've dealt with it at that point.
And so you're optimistic about our being able to respond to whatever the challenges are. That's what I'm hearing. You're optimistic.
I personally, yes, I am.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful, Max. So how can people listen to your podcast?
All they have to do is search the Local Maximum. Today's episode coming out tonight is kind of a math-based episode. I'm talking about the nature of infinity. But sometimes we talk about, the tech news coming out. We talked about self-driving cars earlier. We talked about the coming of 5G, all that stuff. What are our social media companies doing to us? All that type of stuff. And you can get it anywhere you get podcasts, basically. iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, Spotify, all of them. Or you can go to the website, localmaxradio.com.
Thank you, Max Lahr. Thanks for joining us today. Thank you for your eye on reporting on the Harvard-Yale game or the Yale-Harvard game.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Max.
Yeah, what a game.
Appreciate it. We'll be right back. WICC 600, WICC600.com on the Lisa Wexler Show at 203-333-9422. Coming up, a conversation, why and how is it that Danbury Hospital is away from the crowd in suing its own patients? Stay tuned. Hola, hola. Welcome back. 203-333-9422. So I woke up this morning. Let me back up by telling you a story. It was a January, I think it was 2015, and I was traveling to Baltimore with Joanna and Bill, and I was in the front seat, and Bill was driving, and we were in the Chevy runs deep, and Joanna was in the back seat, and we were driving to Baltimore. We got started on a Sunday morning around 10 a.m., and as soon as we left our street, immediately we knew it was bad weather, but you know what? We made the decision to keep going, which was a mistake. And what happened was we got on the Merritt Parkway, and we live around exit 41. We were traveling south, right around Newfield, right before the Newfield Avenue Bridge. So what is that, around exit 36 to 35, around there? An ice storm was happening, and later I found out that 216 accidents occurred on the Merritt Parkway and 95 in 20 minutes. 216 accidents because all of a sudden on this crazy Sunday morning in January in 2015, the roads iced up. They iced up out of nowhere. It was one of these mixture, sleety, horrible things. And all of a sudden it got cold like a snap. 216 accidents. So we're driving. And you know, when you're in an accident, when things happen to you in the world, how they slow up, how you can see things in slow motion. So I'm driving in the front seat with Bill. And we're going maybe, I don't know, 20, 30 miles an hour. Whatever we're going because we're moving. But we're moving slowly because the weather is bad. And all of a sudden, the car in front of us spins out and is horizontal on the road. Okay? It's horizontal. And we're on the two-lane Merritt Parkway without a shoulder. And my husband utters a curse. And you can imagine what that curse was. Long and howling as he tries frantically to decide, is he going to hit the guardrail? Is he going to go off the road? Or is he going to hit the car? And in seconds, he had no choice. He slowed up as best as he could. but he collided with the car in front of us that was horizontal because the brakes were skidding. It was a horrible skidding ice. And then about 20 seconds later, we got hit. So you know that accordion thing? So because we were in the Chevy Equinox, which I highly recommend in terms of its safety, the cabin of our car was virtually untouched. But the front and rear end was a total loss, like an accordion. But the cabin was okay. Later, I learned that they have some kind of safety feature, and it really did work. And so we all went out of my passenger side window. We crawled out of the car. We crawled onto the embankment of the Merritt Parkway, along with dozens of others around us that were stopped in the frigid weather. And we waited for about an hour until an ambulance came to take us to Stamford Hospital. We got to Stamford Hospital, and the reason we had to wait so long is thank God we were okay in the sense of, you know, living and breathing and being okay. But I knew we needed to get checked out because my daughter, underneath her eye, it had started to bruise. And I was worried because I was afraid that she had a head injury or an eye injury that was just starting to seep from the outside where you could see the discoloration under her eye. And she had hit her head pretty violently, even though I think her seatbelt was on, but I'm not sure. She had hit her head pretty violently against the back of my front seat. So we make our way to the hospital, and we are seen in the ER. And we're in Stamford Hospital, and I receive I have one scan done on me because they just want to make sure I'm a little bit rattled and I'm okay. Joanna has one x-ray done of her head, and Bill has an x-ray done of his wrist. We were not seen by any specialists. We were not admitted to the hospital. We did not stay overnight, and within 4 hours, we were let go. Okay, so one x-ray and two scans. The bill from Stamford Hospital was $50,000 between the three of us. $50,000. Why do I know? I got the bill. The bill was so outrageously high, I almost choked on it. And I said, and then first of all, we had to figure out who was going to pay it. Our car insurance, which we thought should have paid it, apparently we didn't have the right kind of coverage and they didn't pay it. So it was paid by our medical coverage, which was Blue Cross Blue Shield at the time. And Blue Cross Blue Shield saw the bill, and they called us, listen to this, and they pretty much accused us of committing some kind of fraud. And I said, are you out of your mind? I don't control what the hospital bills, and if you're upset about it, don't pay it. Leave me out of it. We pay high enough premiums as it is. They ended up negotiating the bill. They probably paid 30 out of the 50,000. I think they did. I think they paid 31,000 out of the 50,000. And I saw that and I was aghast, absolutely aghast. And the reason I'm bringing that up and the reason I told that story is because that story is the story of our hospitals today. They grossly overcharge for our services. And most of the time when there's a third party payer, you and I don't have to worry about it if we have decent health insurance because the health insurance company is paying it. But if we don't have health insurance or our deductibles are so high, then we do have to worry about it because in the end, the unpaid amount comes to us. Now, I saw a story today. I saw a story today that was astonishing to me. And the story today is that Danbury Hospital is under investigation now because of the amount of patients it is suing in the small claims court for unpaid hospital bills. They are actually an outlier among Connecticut hospitals. They are number one in the state in suing patients. And let me tell you some of the stats. In 2016, Danbury Hospital sued 6,400 patients for unpaid bills. Nearly half of all lawsuits filed by Connecticut hospitals against patients that year, according to something called the UConn Health Disparities Institute. They won $9 million in small claims in that year. 46% of all the money hospitals were awarded from patients in small claims court. By the way, awarding it doesn't mean they collected it. Danbury Hospital had 600 active small claims cases on a single day in 2017. The hospital with the next highest total, 82. The rest of the state's 26 hospitals had several dozen to zero, according to the same institute. And between 2005 and 2019, the average self-sufficiency wage for a family of two adults and two children rose by 31%, while the cost of health care rose by 77%, according to the Connecticut Office of Health Strategy. A report from UConn Health Disparities Institute singled out Danbury for collecting so much money in court awards from patients. And as a consequence of taking patients to court, hospitals across the country have become some of America's most aggressive debt collectors. 203-333-9422. They're now being reviewed by this OHS. The parent company of Danbury Hospital lost $13 million in 2018 before merging with a four-hospital network in New York to form Nuvance. You see them on all the billboards. So now Danbury is aligned with New Milford and Norwalk Hospitals, part of a $2.4 billion health system stretching from Long Island Sound to the Hudson River. Is that what we can expect from Milford Hospital and Norwalk Hospital now? Can we now expect a more aggressive debt collection practice inherited from Danbury Hospital? Bill Pettit raised this, a ranking Republican member of the Connecticut General Assembly's Public Health Committee, as well as U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal, a Democrat. They want answers from the hospital. And I raise this in connection with the story of what happened to us. A collision that was frightening, causing $50,000 in billing from Stanford Hospital, which was later $31,000 to Blue Cross Blue Shield, which accused us of manipulating the bills. Are they out of their mind? What do we have to do with what the hospital bills? And how do you justify $50,000 or even $31,000 for one x-ray and two scans, not seeing one specialist and staying in an emergency room for 3 to 4 hours and not being admitted overnight? No operations, no surgery, no cuts, no bruises. How do you justify $31,000 with an original billing of $50,000? And that was Stanford Hospital. And that was 4 to 5 years ago. So what are we talking about here? It's 1130, 203-333-9422. You have any war stories about any hospitals suing you for small claims? Danbury suing 6,400 people, patients in 1 year in 2016? 203-333-9422. We'll be right back. Bienvenidos. Welcome back to the show. 203-333-9422. So, what'd you do this weekend? You know what I did? I had a wonderful brunch for my staff. I had such a good time. And you know, it was so wonderful because, so I have a summer intern program. And what we do, and if you know anybody who wants to do this, you should send me a quick email at lisa@lisawexler.com with a resume. But what I do every summer is I invite would-be lawyers, some who are in college and others who are already in law school, and they become what we call the clerk for the summer, and they come into the Westport Probate Court, and they learn a lot. And they don't get paid in dollars, but they get paid in training, apprenticeship, learning. And then when they leave me after the summer, I dub them part of my army of justice. And every year I host a fall brunch and I invite them back as well as my own staff and I do the cooking. And we have a wonderful time sitting around a table and talking. And we get to talk about real opinions because my dining room table is a judgment-free zone. And one of the people that was talking last night was somebody who is now in law school at a pretty liberal law school, and he was dejected about the fact that he supports President Trump, and he felt like he couldn't make any friends at his law school because his political opinion was such an obstacle that people wouldn't even be friends with him, which was so awful and such a sign of the times of where we are today, and it shouldn't be. Let's go to Donna from Trumbull. Hi, Donna. Welcome to the show today. Hello.
Hi, Lisa. This is a wonderful opportunity.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I've, I'm calling because you hit a sore spot with me when you talked about the hospital bills.
Oh, you tell me, Donna. What's your story?
I mean, mine is nothing compared to yours, but it just angered me so much that, I mean, it wasn't even $100, but it was the point of what they had done. Now, every year I go for an annual physical, and my doctor does blood work. And in the past, it's always gone to Quest Lab.
Mm-hmm.
And they pay my insurance in full.
Right.
To cover it. Instead, this year, he sent it to Bridgeport Hospital. He's associated with Bridgeport Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they have rules now
mm-hmm.
that they have to do everything. Mm-hmm. I'm just surmising, but that's the way it seems. The bill for the blood work.
Let me hear.
Was exorbitant.
Mm-hmm.
It was over $500.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is the same blood work that I had done previous years at Quest.
And you knew that at Quest it was much less. You looked at the bills.
It was. At least 50% difference.
Wow.
And I said, this is not right. And then to top it off, because, I mean, I pay very high insurance.
Exactly. We all do. That's right.
And I mean, I'm a retired person, mm-hmm. and I don't have Medicare because I was a teacher.
Oh, okay.
And so I pay a very high amount. I pay over $2,000 a quarter.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. I'm paying $700 a month for just me and my husband.
That's it. And so I said, something is really bad here.
Yeah.
And I just was so furious. And then they sent me a bill because my insurance didn't cover it.
So it added insult to injury altogether.
Exactly. That's why it hit a sore spot when I heard you.
Yeah. No, it's true, Donna. And that, you know what? And your bill times the tens of thousands of patients like you is how some of these hospitals are staying in business. Now, they will argue that they're taxed, you know, that to be in business in Connecticut is an expensive undertaking, that they can't
mm-hmm.
make it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're all paying for it, aren't we, Donna? We're all paying for it. Yes.
For sure. I mean, even though we have insurance, it doesn't seem to make a difference. They just raised the price higher.
That's right. And, you know, this idea that you have to go where the doctor writes the script, let me tell you something. My doctor also is connected with a blood lab which is owned by Norwalk Hospital.
Oh.
And they can't get the individual there had to stick me 3 or 4 times and I won't go back. So because I have thin, twisty veins, it's very traumatic for me to get my blood done. It's one of the few things in my own little physicality that freaks me out because I need somebody to get it right. And the guy at Quest, who's the manager of the one at 148 East Avenue, I don't even know your name, but a shout out to you. You're fabulous. He always gets me. So you know what? I took that script and I went to Quest and they were happy to fill it. Even though the doctor wanted me to go to the one owned by Norwalk Hospital, I still did what I wanted and my insurance company covered it. And the results were disseminated back to my physician. So,
well, now the worst thing with me, my doctor draws my own blood.
Oh, he does?
Okay. Yes.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I was not aware of it. He sent it to Bridgeport Hospital. Oh. I got this bill from Bridgeport Hospital. And I said, well, I was never in Bridgeport Hospital.
Oh, I got you. Totally different then. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I said, something's not right. But so. I called the insurance company and they said, well, you know, they couldn't do any more about it.
And so you had to pay it? Did you have to pay the difference?
I had to pay the extra.
Wow.
Yeah, I had to pay the extra because, you know, they have a cutoff. And so I understand the insurance company's situation too.
So let me ask you something. The next time the doctor could write you a script and you could take that script to Quest and have your blood done there.
Well, what I said to the insurance company, well, my doctor is never going to take my blood again unless I know for a fact he will send it to Quest.
Yeah, how do you, and you know what? Let me tell you.
I'm going to say to him, as he starts getting ready to take the blood, I'm going to say, where is this going?
And so
and
let me
tell
you what's going to happen.
Story.
So what's going to happen is Quest still provides an alternative because they're competition for the hospitals. But what happens when they're squeezed out and then there's no competition?
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. They're going to be squeezed out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Wow.
So yeah. I said, if we can nip this in the bud, all the better.
Yeah. Thank you for calling,
Donna. I don't know how
Donna.
We can with the...
No, I think we can by taking control over our health care and watching these numbers and expenses.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for the hospitals because I think we're one of the only states in the country that taxes hospitals. I mean, their bills are insane.
Oh, I wasn't aware. They're taxed?
Yeah, this is a relatively new thing. I think it came under the Malloy administration.
Oh,
yeah, they're paying taxes that they never used to pay. They are not-for-profits, and most not-for-profits are exempt from many taxes. But we decided in our, infinite wisdom and poverty that we wanted to put a hospital tax on. They're bleeding too, so to speak. It's awful, really.
It's a vicious circle.
Right? It really is, Donna. But listen, in our micromanaging way, we have to protest. So I'm glad that you called. Thank you.
Well, like I said, I just couldn't resist.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And thank you for listening.
Thank you. I love the show.
Thank you. 203-333-9422 on WICC 600 and WICC600.com. I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that if you missed any part of the show, or if you just want to hear it again because you feel like it, you can go on WICC600.com and click the link. And you can also go on something called SoundCloud.com. And if you're somebody who understands how to use your iPhone and you see that you've got this wonderful icon on your home screen, if you look at it right now, I'll look at it with you on your home screen. It is purple and it has an icon of a microphone in it and it's got some swirly waves around it. And underneath it, it says podcasts. And if you press that and on the bottom, there's a magnifying glass, which is the search icon. And if you type in Lisa Wexler, the show comes right up. And then you press my face. Just press right into my face. And then press subscribe. And then, whether you want to listen or not at your own leisure, the podcast will come up onto your iPhone every time you press the podcast icon. And they'll be part of your library. And that's an easy way to listen to shows as well. And we appreciate it. We really do. We're getting many, many downloads every single week. And it's nice because Christian does the work of taking out the commercials and making it really easy for you. 203-333-9422. So did you know, will it surprise you, that we are one of the worst states for robocalls, according to a recent report? Connecticut ranks 8th when it comes to the most complaints to the FCC. And according to the report, most types of complaints have decreased in the last 3 years, with the exception of unwanted robocalls, which have gone up. Unwanted calls have increased by 35% in the last 3 years. Connecticut ranked 3rd in 2018 for the most complaints about robocalls. We had 320 complaints per 100,000 residents. And everybody that I know finds them incredibly annoying. Overall, we had a total of almost 500 complaints per 100,000 residents across all categories. Well, we are robustly vocal people. Calls about robocalls made up almost 66% of complaints to the FCC. And if you want to avoid them, theoretically, you can put your name on the Do Not Call registry. But I want to tell you, don't waste your time. I've done it a million times. It doesn't help. I still get the robocalls. Let's go. Are we going to George from Bridgeport? Hi, George. Welcome to the show today. Hi.
I live to be a sure of a morning.
You do?
I'm about to the hospital.
Thank you, George.
I have to call you.
Sure.
In 2018,
yep.
My head was like you're going to tear up. So I went to the hospital, and the doctor just asked me, what's wrong? And I told him. He didn't do anything to me. I got a bill for $885.
Yeah, I believe it, George. I believe
and
it.
And right now, I can't pay it, and they take me to court.
Oh, they did? They took you to court?
Not yet, but they send me a warrant that they're going to take me to court.
Yeah, this is what
I can't pay.
Yeah, this is what's happening all over the state. Bridgeport does a lot less of it than Danbury. I told you about. Did you hear? Have you been listening to the show for the last hour?
Yes. I heard about Danbury.
Could you about Danbury? 6,400 in 1 year alone in 2016. They're an outlier in the state. They're being investigated. Why they sue so many people? George, do you have insurance?
No, I don't.
And are you on Medicaid?
Yes, I'm on Medicaid.
Well, if you're on Medicaid, I don't know why they're suing you. They know that you, they know that you're poor and you're on Medicaid. I don't understand why they're suing you. I mean, really. Listen, is it in small claims court? If it's $885, it should be in what we call small claims court.
In court.
Well, right now, they're just sending you letters to try and get you to pay. Is that right, George? Is that what's happening now?
Well, maybe that's what they're doing.
Yeah, they're trying to get some money out of you. They're trying to get some. Listen, George, if you call the person who wrote the letter, because these letters are very aggravating to people. They keep them up nights. They worry about them. If you're worried about this, call the person who signed the letter and make them a very modest offer.
Yes.
Say, if I can pay you, I don't know, whatever number you think is fair, will you stop and explain that you're on Medicaid? Chances are, I can't promise it, I'm not your lawyer, but chances are they would prefer to settle with you rather than sue you.
Okay.
All right? And I don't want you worrying about it, but I know exactly how you feel. How you feel. And thank you, George, for the call. So give them a call, because if you call them, it'll stop the letters, and any offer is better than ignoring them. But I know. I know how you feel. Thank you for calling.
Okay, thanks, Lisa.
Okay, we'll be right back. WICC 600 War Stories from Hospital Bills on the Lisa Wexler Show today. We'll be right back. And let me catch you up on some political news you may have missed. You know that Brenda Kupchick was the victor and beat Mike Tetrow to become the new first selectman of Fairfield. So she has resigned her House seat as a state representative. She resigned on Friday in advance of taking office today as the chief elected official of Fairfield. So that is one seat that is open. The next seat that is open is Representative Fred Camillo winning the open seat with the resignation of Peter Tesi in Greenwich. He's a Republican. He also intends to resign before taking office of first selectman of Greenwich next month. So those are two, and those are both held by Republicans. And then the third seat that becomes open is the seat. Somebody passed away from, Linda Orange, Democrat of Colchester, passed away. And there were many obituaries about her last week. So, and she died, and she was relatively young when she passed away. So that's three resignations. Once Camillo resigns, there will be 89 Democrats and 59 Republicans in the State House of Representatives. The 2020 session begins February 5th. Under state law, the governor has 10 days to issue a writ of election to choose a successor once a vacancy is declared, and the special election must be held on the 46th day after the writ is issued. So there will be likely three elections. So if you live up in Colchester or Fairfield or Greenwich, you're going to have a chance to choose a new state representative for your district. 203-333-9422. Being in Westport, I was really heartbroken to hear of the death of Turk Aksoy, a 13-year veteran of the department. He died. He was only 46 years old. He died on Friday. He was diagnosed with advanced metastatic colon cancer in 2014 at the age of 41. His medical team and the Firefighters Union in Westport say his death was a result of duties as a firefighter. The National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health has undertaken studies that concluded firefighters face a 9% increase in cancer diagnoses and a 14% increase in cancer-related deaths compared to the general population. Aksoy spoke to state lawmakers in 2016 on legislation involving cancer in firefighters. You know, we know that there has been a causative link proved between the first responders in 2001 at 9/11 and many, many deaths that are happening right now from cancer. And to add to this tragedy of this family, he has two children. His wife, Denise, died earlier this year. Before his cancer diagnosis, Turk had competed in numerous triathlons. He was obviously a superb athlete. His union president, Nick Marsan, says occupational cancer has proven to be the new epidemic we face in the fire service. Far too many members of the fire service have been lost to this relentless illness. I'm just reminded of the extraordinary service both professional and volunteer firefighters give to our communities. Our own Christian, our own wonderful producer Christian, are you or are you not Christian, in fact, a volunteer firefighter for your town?
Not in my town, in a neighboring town.
In a neighbor, but you are a volunteer firefighter.
Yes.
How come, and what town is that you volunteer for?
Derby.
And so let me ask you something. If you don't live in Derby, how did you come to be associated as a volunteer firefighter for Derby?
Family tradition. My father's family came from Derby.
Oh.
And he's the only one that never got involved, but my uncle, my grandfather, my great uncle, and almost every cousin I have there is in there. So I was sort of born into it.
And so how many, you know, hours a month or how many days a week? What is the investment of time when you're a volunteer firefighter in Derby? It might differ depending on community.
It depends on how many calls you get, really. And but, of course, we train every week. And
every week you train?
Yes, every Thursday. And you have to take the state-required class to be a certified fireman. And that is a six-month class.
Really?
Yep. I was in it 2010. It was every Tuesday and Thursday from 6:30 to 10:30 and every Sunday from 8 to 4.
Wow.
From January to May.
That's a big investment of time. And do you pass an exam at the end?
Yes. You have to do what they call the practical portion, which is all the basic skills for fundamentals of firefighting. And upon completion of that, you then must take a written exam.
Do you have to be very physically strong?
Yes and no. I mean, you should be able to pull, you know, somebody to safety, of course.
Right.
But yeah, you have to go. And then the department requires that you go for an annual physical.
Do they watch your weight? Do they not want obese firefighters in the service? How do they do
most,
that?
Most, if there are any obese ones, they pretty much that's what they call exterior. So they don't go in and fight the fire. They'll drive the truck or they'll run the ladder or run the pump to get the water flowing.
Okay. So there are other jobs they can do even as a volunteer if they're overweight.
Yes.
But they don't want you to be overweight, obviously.
No.
Obviously. And how many volunteer firefighters are there in your, what would you call it, a troop, a group? What do you call it?
Well, Derby is divided into companies.
A company.
Yes.
Okay.
And so at our company, we have 75 guys on the roster, but some of them have since moved away, and they still continue to be members. But responding to fires, we've got a good 25, 30 guys.
And so how many fire, like right now, I know it's fire season, right? This tends to be one of the,
yes.
Our fire chief, Nate Gibbons, told me the other day when he came to quell the burning car from our mouse fire, which, by the way, wasn't a mouse. He told me the other day it was a squirrel.
Squirrel?
He found the corpse. It was a squirrel's nest inside my car. Could you imagine? Anyway, but he said he had had six calls before noon that day.
Yep.
So this is busy season. So can you be called anytime 24/7? Do you have like a beeper by your bed? Like how are you called if it's the middle of the night? What? Are you showing me?
Yeah, I've got my little radio here.
You've got a special radio.
So I belong to a ladder company, which is the only standalone ladder company in the state. Every other ladder is paired with an engine.
What's a ladder company?
It's a fire company that runs only a ladder truck. So most companies will run an engine with the ladder, and that's just the way it is. But we are the only company in the state that runs only a ladder.
What is an engine with a ladder? You have to speak in like English for people who are complete ignoramuses myself.
An engine is a pumper truck. They carry water.
Oh.
And a ladder truck carries ladders.
Oh, so you have to hook up to a fire hydrant.
Yes, the engines. Well, we could do that because our truck has a pump on it.
Okay.
It's. I had this conversation with Jay Michaels a while back. It was hard to describe it.
Okay.
But yes.
All right. But you're a ladder truck. And does that mean you're climbing a lot of ladders?
Yes.
Wow. Are you afraid of heights, Christian?
No.
Okay. So in the last, I don't know, month, how many times have you gotten on the truck to go to a fire?
On the truck? I don't know. I did go to one call that was sounded like it was something smoke in the building. So, because I don't live in Derby. Unless I'm right there, I don't really make the truck too much.
So what do you do then?
Take my own car.
Oh, you take your own car. Okay. Yeah. But what I'm saying is, how many fires have you responded to in the last month? 10?
Personally, I think it was just one.
Just one in the last month. But you're ready, just in case.
Yeah, I'm ready. Yeah, I got my gear in the car.
You got your gear in the car.
Yeah. Why, you want to dress up in it after the show?
It's really cool. I have to say, it's very, very cool that you're a firefighter.
Thank you.
I think it's really, really cool. Anyway, Christian, so thank you for that. In the meantime, a different kind of a situation. A lot of people are reporting burglaries of unlocked cars. 24 over 2 nights in Darien alone. But I've heard about this in Westport and other towns. And what the police are cautioning is, please lock your car. It's just as simple as that. I mean, if they really want to break in, they can, I guess. But you make it easy for them if you keep your car unlocked. And there are story after story after story of just these people that are getting out there to get your stuff. I guess, you know what, it's Christmas season. They feel if they can't afford a present for their family, they might as well steal yours. So a lot of people have stuff in their cars. And that's a big story. In the meantime, in some news you may have missed, prosecutors appear to be zeroing in on Alan Weisselberg, who is the CFO of the Trump Organization. He's 72 years old. He's an accountant. And I had thought that he had reached a plea deal early on in exchange for his testimony. But apparently, the report is that Manhattan DA Cyrus Vance Jr.'s criminal investigation of the Trump Organization is scrutinizing Alan Weisselberg, and they're scrutinizing him in connection with arranging a payment to the porn actress Stormy Daniels in exchange for her silence about an alleged sexual encounter with Donald Trump. So that is on the horizon. Those of you who keep track on the Trump Organization will be interested in that, because Weisselberg, along with Donald Trump's two sons, are still running the Trump Organization business. The scrutiny stems from his reported role in hiding the hush money payments. Obviously, we know they went after Michael Cohen, and Michael Cohen is now in the middle of his 3-year term at Otis Federal Prison in New York. All right, lots more coming up. Let's see what else I must tell you before we go. We have so many news stories here. Did you see that President Trump fired the Navy Secretary? That's probably a bigger story than we can talk about in the next 30 seconds. We'll probably have to go into that tomorrow. But he announced in a tweet that he will nominate U.S. Ambassador to Norway Kenneth Braithwaite to replace former Navy Secretary Richard Spencer. Spencer was fired by Defense Secretary Mark Esper. And Spencer had a lot to say about it, and he still has a lot to say about it. And if you're a member of the Navy, I know you're paying close attention. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600. In the meantime, Clark Howard comes up next, and then from 2 to 6, Paul Pacelli on your community radio station, WICC 600 and WICC600.com. We'll be back behind the mic tomorrow.